Hi, my name's Tori and I wish I knew more about blood products.
Hi, my name's Letitia. I wish I knew more about taking care of myself when starting shift work.
Hi, my name is Lydia. I wish I would know more about how to work as in a team and solve conflict.
Hello, welcome to Five Things, the nursing podcast from the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital. My name is Liz Crowe.
I'm Jesse Spur, and this is a podcast by, for, and with the amazing nurses and health professionals in our corner of the world. We hope to connect with a global community as we move from surviving to thriving. Welcome to Five Things.
Hello, my name is Liz Crowe.
And I'm Jesse Spur.
Welcome to another episode of Five Things, and today we've got something really special. We are welcoming Sandra Stewart, who's actually an architect, and she's the health sector leader for Buchan Architects, where her specialty is designing hospitals for the well-being of patients and staff. Welcome, Sandra.
Thank you, Liz and Jesse. Happy to be here.
We're excited, and what a cool job title.
I know. It's just an amazing opportunity to be able to design hospitals. I kind of feel quite privileged in the role, so I definitely appreciate the opportunities, you know, to be able to design hospitals for well-being.
Awesome. I know you've actually listened to a couple of episodes, so you know we're after an origin story, but this, I'm imagining, will have some interesting twists and turns to end up doing what you're doing now.
It is an interesting origin story. As architects, we tend to specialize in very different areas. And, you know, when we first finish at university, we try lots of different parts of architecture. We might do design, we might do site, we then might move into different sectors. We might do, you know, hospitals or universities or schools. So there's just so many parts to architecture, and you don't realize so many facets. And as a student, you then want to really try everything and then move into the areas that you like to specialize in. So I actually started my career doing retail and mixed use, which is obviously very different to health. And then over time, I was in a very large practice that had different sectors. So again, as a student, I was trying different sectors, and I was in retail mixed use, which is kind of a bit of master planning and medium density. So it had a lot of variety. And then over time, I actually dabbled in a few health projects, and then from there really focused on health. And interesting the way that some of these health projects are becoming so large, they're also becoming town centres in themselves. And so the nice piece now is I'm bringing back all my master planning, my retail mixed use, and bringing that into health as well, and combining all my knowledge into health projects. So it's kind of a full circle moment, because I can bring all my years of experience towards health at the moment.
Bearing in mind that most of us are working in hospitals that we cannot change, you've been really generous and kind of brought five things that perhaps we can just all be conscious of when we're thinking about design for the well-being of both patients and staff, which I think is going to be really interesting. So your number one is natural light and views. Can you talk to us about that, please?
Yes, thank you. So I guess the piece here I wanted to really focus on is, obviously, as designers, we strive to design spaces that provide a positive impact, you know, not only to the patients, but to staff as well. Before I get into that, I just wanted to get the point across about evidence-based design.
So I've done a PhD on well-being, so I'm very curious, what is the evidence about how important design is for the well-being of patients and staff?
Well, as designers, we strive to design spaces that provide a positive impact on a patient's well-being and also on staff's work environment. We have to factor in that, you know, this is someone's office and they're here all day, every day. So I think the opportunity to provide a really nice place for staff and a really nice place for patients and their well-being is really important for designers. So I think the other thing we try to also think about is what we call evidence-based design. And this was a term that was coined in 2006, and it was actually by an American researcher called Robert Ulrich. And the interesting thing is, and I like the parallels that we draw with the clinical side of nursing, where you look at evidence-based design to provide a clinical outcome and trials. And then as designers, we like to use some evidence-based design in the way we approach the hospital spaces. And that's the important piece for us. So I know we're leading into natural light, which is one of the topics that I thought was really important for hospital design. And similarly, there was a research paper done on natural light in hospital rooms and patients' well-being. And so I thought, because you guys would like some facts, I thought it might be a cool way to introduce our piece by having a bit of research that I can draw on that just shows the parallels between our evidence-based design that we do and how we try and focus on a better outcome for patients and staff.
Yeah, terrific. So you've already alluded to it, but your number one is the importance of natural light and views. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, I think the importance of natural light is really about reducing stress, improving mood, and just supporting the body's natural circadian rhythm. So if you think about if you're in a room, the ability to look outside, see if it's cloudy day, a sunny day, look at nature, look at trees, it can really improve your well-being. And the whole idea is that we really want people to recover as soon as possible and recover in a positive way that when they go home, they can recover really well. So I think we really like to focus on in the rooms, definitely it's about natural light and it's about having a view that can be really a distraction as well. And if you think about people's mindsets when they're in a hospital, if you're looking outside, that can be quite a good distraction whilst you're trying to recover.
And I think sometimes, like, we're going to acknowledge that a lot of us are working in largely non-modifiable work environments is a, like, euphemism maybe. But what can be modifiable is where we take people, where we move, where we go and have our breaks. So, like, thinking of that as a worker, trying to get outside to get some exposure, get some separation, get some of that natural light that may not be available in the work area, but also taking patients out who can't take themselves out is something that we shouldn't just settle for it not being possible because we're too busy. We should really advocate for the resources to be able to do that because there is good evidence that it reduces risk of delirium, it improves rates of recovery, and reduces bed block days in hospital as well. So I love that that's first point. Just didn't want people to go, yeah, but our place can't do that.
And it kind of seems an obvious first one, but it is just so important to be able to have the ability to go outside, have the ability to see the sky. You know, it's really good for orientation around a hospital. You think about your journey to the hospital, you know, you can be quite anxious on your journey. So again, it's not just once you're in your room, but also when you move around the hospital, having windows and natural daylight can really orientate you around the building. And it can be quite social as well. As you said, Jesse, your example about the staff going out outside, you know, you can just imagine being inside for a shift. You really want that ability to go outside and have a break and then come back.
Yeah. And I guess when you're thinking about design, it's not just about having the window, but it's about how we position our patients or ourselves so that we can maximize that space and use the natural light that's there, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting you raise that because there was a study that was actually looking at a 6-bedroom ward, and it was actually the patients that were up against the window that recovered quicker than the ones that were up against the door.
Yeah.
So it actually does have a bigger picture effect on your ability to recover quicker. And that's what we'd like people to do is, you know, have our built environment be able to help you recover quicker.
It's funny, we let often convention with how a bed is situated dictate the environment and not realize actually you can spin that thing 180 degrees to look the different way. That's something we did a lot in our ICU as patients were kind of waking up, starting to recover and entering into that kind of, I guess, critical rehabilitation before being able to step down to a ward is the heads of the bed with the configuration of the workspace were actually to the window. So the patient couldn't look out the window.
Right.
So we would go, and there's just a natural, I guess, predisposition to just being anchored by what you see is all there is. So one day, I can't remember when, it was years ago, but came in and someone had just spun the bed around. So still everything was connected that needed to be connected to the patient. It's like you walk in and you're going, oh, we're looking at the back of the bed from the nurse's station rather than the patient's face. And also then they're not having to peer into the rest of the unit as well. So, I mean, sometimes it can be just really simple things that actually we think of as non-modifiable, but are actually just breaking the shackles of just all we see is all there is.
Right. So your number two is the importance of comfortable and functional spaces.
So comfortable and functional spaces, we tend to focus on designing the patient rooms and the common areas with comfortable furniture, appropriate lighting, functional layouts that can enhance probably relaxation and ease of movement around the building. Noise reduction, obviously we can all be affected by noise pollution in a hospital. And then quiet zones are also an important factor when we're designing hospitals as well. So people can have a break or a respite whilst they're in the hospital themselves. And it might not even just be the patient. It could be your carers, family members. So we're kind of thinking of all those spaces within a hospital. And then I think it's also focusing on not only patient recovery, but again, staff well-being. And that's the other piece we need to keep focusing on, is there's two parts to designing a hospital. There's the patient and then there's the staff.
And so with the comfortable and functional, I imagine that when you're designing a hospital, you have a gold standard of what you want, and then we keep coming back and saying, oh no, the patients need this amount of room, or theatres need this, or this is the limited space. How hard is it to kind of make comfortable happen with functional when you're designing a hospital?
It's actually a good question. And we try and balance both, because we find that hospitals can be very process driven and yes, very functional spaces. But we want to add that layer of comfort. So again, it feels more homely, and you also feel like that you're not in a void or a vacuum of very hard surfaces. So we really do try and bring in these extra layers on top that can actually make you feel better and help in your recovery.
Yeah. And so given, as Jesse said, that most of us are in a fixed kind of space already, in terms of comfortable and function, like, are there little things that if I'm listening to this and I'm trying to think about something I could do for my office or for the bed space or for the nurse's station, do you have any great ideas about, you know, small things that can make a big difference?
Some of the areas that can really make a difference is lighting. We spoke earlier about natural light, but also the artificial light. And that can really have an effect on someone's well-being, not only staff but patient as well. And so lighting is about whether it's warm light or a cool light, and that can also have an effect on your stay in the hospital as well. So we know that warm lights can make you feel comfortable and relaxed, and we know that cool lights can be more stimulating and make you feel alert and more focused.
So I'm going to ask the question, how would I know if something's a warm light or if it's a cool light? I actually know the answer to this because my parents owned a lighting store. But for people who don't know anything about it, what's the difference? Like, what is a cool light? What is a warm light?
So a warm light is you'll walk into a space and you'll have a feeling like that it's quite relaxed and welcoming. Whereas if you have a cool, it's a brighter light.
Yeah, it's a brighter light.
Sometimes people say it's a more bluer light.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, depending on the function of the room, it can be make you feel quite alert. So you would then think, well, in a room, I don't really want a cool light at nighttime, because that's when I really want a warm light, because I need to be going to sleep. So you're trying to then in the room have the effect of almost daylight.
I think, like, for the modern generation, probably the easiest description is for iPhone users, the automated warm light or night light mode that kicks in as a default, usually between 10 and 7, or you can modify the settings on it.
Yes.
And it's kind of an yellowy, yellowish based light as opposed to a white blue based light when you flick that screen off.
Mentioned it on Natural Light about circadian rhythms, but it's a really important topic when you are in a hospital, because you want to try and get that feeling of it's day or it's night. And so if it's night, I should be asleep. And if it's day, I should be awake. And technology with LED lights, you know, they can actually do that. They can get that feeling of night and day. But also, you know, the ability maybe to have a dimmer, because why not be able to control your own space? And everyone's different. And so then the ability to have some control would be quite beneficial in patients' recovery.
I don't know if this is the place to talk about, but under comfort and design, I would imagine that if you weren't working in a hospital, you know, you're thinking about carpet colors and curtain colors and things that, you know, help create this kind of beautiful sense of a space. In hospitals, when we're often all about bare floors and nothing that can get caught, are there any other things that you creatively use to, I don't know, give us that level of depth or colors?
We can, obviously, color, number one, that can influence the mood in the space. It can make it feel big, can make it feel small, can happy. You know, it's different moods come with color. Materiality is a big one for us. We're able to, we may not be able to use real timber in a hospital, but we can certainly have that timber look. And again, that's about a mood and a feeling. And we bring that by other materials. So you might find a bench will look like timber and it's a timber laminate. So again, we tick the boxes for compliance, but again, it's that mood and feeling of timber. So where possible, we will try and bring in materials and colours that will affect your mood in a positive way, or we hope we're doing it in a positive way, that can feel more homely. It's definitely one of the things we do try and challenge ourselves in the IPUs, is to try and bring in something that's a little bit different and feels a bit more homely, so that you, again, this is the mindset of being in a hospital and your ability to recover and your well-being. So where possible, we really want to have that feeling that it is improving your stay in the hospital.
Terrific. All right. So number three, I don't even know what this means, is biophilic design. So what is biophilic design?
So biophilic design is a really important one for architects in designing spaces, especially in hospitals. And it's really about integrating nature where possible into the hospital. And that can be done with plants, natural materials, water features. And we know the benefits of planting with improves the air quality, reduces stress, and creates a more soothing environment. And you can feel the same at home. Again, I try and draw these analogies from home back into the hospital, because that's a really important way to draw those parallels of how do I feel at home versus how do I feel in the hospital. And so planting is a great opportunity to create a healing environment where it is very much centered around the patient, but also the benefits of the staff as well. So again, can you imagine if you come to work and you've got this amazing array of planting, or the ability to go somewhere where there's planting? So it could be a garden or a breakout space. So I think that's a really important piece. We try and get more and more of that into our designs now. And we can do this in the public spaces as well. So we can think creatively where we're trying to bring in the greenery that we'd all like to see and feel, but not get caught up on the clinical piece.
So again, I've got a budget of nothing. I've already got an existing ward. We know that we have to be careful about plants and soils. If you have a great looking artificial plant, does that actually help, or does it not? Like if it provides a sense of greenery, is that better even if it's fake?
I think the fake plants are getting better and better these days.
Yeah.
So, and I think if you're looking at it from a distance, sometimes you can't even tell the difference if it's real or not. So I think having the ability to see the greenery is still important to your well-being. I mean, you won't obviously get the different in the environment, because, we talked about the greenery about, giving off the improving the air quality. But I think that's almost like an added bonus in this situation, because, again, if I could come in and from a distance I could see greenery, I'm going to feel a lot better as well.
Right. So number four is about being really considerate of art and colour when we're talking about hospital design.
So one of the important pieces of art and colour is, similar to the other examples, was it can really affect your mood whilst you're in the hospital. And also we're looking for any ability to reduce anxiety for patients, also comfort for staff and for visitors. So it's interesting, with colour, it can have quite an effect on your mood, and certain colours have different effects on your mood as well. So that's an interesting piece that we find as architects, that we might choose a colour for a particular department or a ward in order to evoke a particular mood. And we definitely are always looking for those uplifting colours that are important, that spark joy and interest and certainly aid in the recovery. So where possible, if we can complement anything that will, again, reduce anxiety, improve your mood and get you to well-being quicker, that's all the avenues we try and look at. And you do see a lot of white walls in hospitals, which is interesting. But, you know, it is interesting, though, that white is associated with relief.
Ah.
So I thought that was an interesting point. And then there's other particular colours where we won't saturate the hospital with colour, but we were very strategic in where we use that colour because it might be then a level of interest. So, that again, as you're circulating around this hospital building, we think about perhaps as a patient you might only see one level and then leave, whereas staff could also move up and down the building. So we're always conscious of then having different levels, perhaps colour code, and it also doubles up as wayfinding as well.
Hmm. And so I'm imagining, but I don't know if it's right, are the pastels kind of like the colours that are feel good and calming? Is that what the sort of colours you're referring to?
Within a colour palette, we would definitely be more on the pastel side of that palette. We certainly wouldn't be too intense with an orange or a green.
Mm.
But then we might pair tones together. So we might use three shades of green in order to, again, spark an interest against each other. So we wouldn't put two colours together, but we would use shades of a colour to drive interest. And it's interesting because colours like green are linked with contentment. So that might double back onto our biophilic design, having contentment with our plants. And then colours like orange and yellow spark joy. So again, depending again on the department or the ward, we might use certain colours to achieve different results.
Yeah. And so if I can't have a view, like there is no window or my office doesn't have the space, how important is it then to have artwork that mirrors nature? Like if we know that the biophilic is important and I can't have the real thing. So we've already talked about artificial plants, but, you know, how important is it to have a beautiful scenic picture?
I think that's really important. And I think also they're a good conversation starter. So we talk about art being a distraction. It can also be a good conversation starter. So if you're in there with family members and, again, you're looking for distraction, you can talk about this piece of art. And you can look at interpretation of the art and what people see in the art. So I think from that perspective, always looking at things that are a distraction, where we talked about the view outside is a distraction, the art can be a distraction, the planting can be a distraction. So again, it's all about the well-being and recovery.
Several episodes ago, we actually interviewed the most amazing Aboriginal woman who was saying that, you know, particularly for people who identify as Indigenous, how important it is for them to be able to see outside. And she also made that suggestion that if that's not possible, it'd be great to have artwork that reminds us of the Australian bush or native Australian animals, etc., which is exactly what you're referring to.
Yeah, and having that piece of art that you can make up a story yourself.
Mm.
It could, you know, again, if you're in there with young children and they're feeling very uncomfortable, you could make up a story together and talk about this piece of art.
Mm.
So they're the pieces I like. And also the art can be all around the hospital. So again, as you're moving around the hospital, you're seeing different pieces of art. So you have the ability to see a variety of art as well. And that's really important when you're circulating around a hospital.
If hospital design is what you do, is art part of that? Like, would you be choosing pieces or suggesting pieces? Or does that go to someone else? Is that someone else's job?
In the public hospitals, they have really amazing teams that curate art. And so if you're doing a brand new development, they'll actually have someone who will go and find the artists. We will work with them on locations because it's really important to have this art scattered throughout the hospital. So we'll work together on a location. We'll work together on the type of art. So is it three-dimensional? Is it painted? Is it digital? Is it on the wall? Is it on the ceiling? And so we work on the spaces of the best locations for the art in order to get that experience as you're walking around the hospital. And then they will go out and find the artists and curate the art pieces.
Mm. So if you have a big blank wall as the architect, you might say you need one big, something big, you know, I'm thinking of this size, or you need three portions to, I don't know the correct terminology, but is that the sort of thing you do?
Yes, we'll work with the art curator who will come from the public hospital, and we will work together on deciding how many there should be in what locations and how big. So you might decide that as I enter into the hospital, I want a really big statement piece, or I might decide as I walk into the hospital, I want to have a lot of biophilic design. So you might then work together on the statement pieces as you walk in, because that's when people are really at their most stressed when they first walk into the hospital, because they're trying to navigate their way around the hospital. So you really want something that can be quite impactful as you enter the hospital. And then you really want to have a few more pieces scattered around the hospital as well. So we try and work together on where best to locate them, the type, and then the colour palette. So again, they're aware of the colours that they're going into those areas.
And are architects also responsible then for noise, like noise reduction, or building, you know, a beautiful sound system into a hospital to create, you know, this beautiful background noise? Is that part of your role as well?
We work with acoustic consultants and they specialize in that area. And so we'll work with them on definitely noise and trying to minimize noise pollution. We know hospitals do have a lot of hard surfaces and they can ricochet sound. And then we tend to speak louder if the room's louder. And so you have this flow-on effect that it gets worse and worse. So we definitely will work with our consultants on particular areas. And you can imagine some really intense areas for recovery where you really want to keep it as quiet as possible.
Yeah.
And then there's some other areas where noise is not such a big issue because you're circulating around these spaces and you're not really stopping. So we will work on definitely the acoustics of particular spaces that depends on how that space is used.
Did you say you work with an acoustic?
Acoustic consultant, yeah.
How do you get that job? What's their background? Would they tend to be architects who've specialised in that, or are they something else?
They tend to be service engineers, so they'll come from a service engineering background. And for service engineers, they have mechanical and electrical, fire and hydraulic. And so within that palette, they'll have someone in their team who specializes in acoustics. And so, yes, we'll definitely work with them on particular levels of acoustics in the hospital and where we might find that it's too noisy and we need to, for example, remove the ceiling tiles and swap them out with another ceiling tile that's going to absorb more noise.
Yeah.
That's a really important part, is how can we absorb noise in hospitals?
Terrific.
Happy to go to fart?
You're on a roll now. You've relaxed, I can tell. Great. So number five is technology integration, which is probably going to be one of Jesse's favourite things to discuss, I would imagine. But what does that entail if you are an architect designing wellbeing spaces in a hospital?
So part of the bigger picture with technology is really trying to think about the whole experience for the patient. If it's your work environment, you know how to circulate the hospital and you know where all the departments are. But technology is a really important piece for patients in how they navigate the hospital. And, you know, the best ways to do that is something like an app. Because you imagine if you walk into this hospital, everyone has an iPhone, you're on the app and that app's going to guide you exactly where to find your next appointment. And that then also reduces your anxiety. So anything that gives technology the leverage to improve your well-being is something that's really important in hospital design.
I think it's really interesting because it does bring up the conundrum of, say we're designing a new space, this is going to be something that's going to be used for decades and largely challenging to modify or very expensive to modify afterwards. So the technology integration can become a really almost a future planning. And who do you work with in those sort of situations to go, yeah, we can implement technology that's available now into the infrastructure of the hospital, but what's going to be needed potentially in 20 years' time?
That's the big question. Yeah. And that's the difficult part, is where is care headed? And then you're trying to predict, which can be quite difficult. So anything like the apps, where it's instantaneous technology, you can always upgrade it, and then it's not relying on the hospital itself to have the latest technology, can be a very helpful way in order to keep your technology up to date. Yeah. The difficulty can be that, you know, there isn't always the budgets to forward think for some of these spaces, and it's really only the ability to buy the latest technology for that hospital that's being fitted out at that point in time. So you're always looking for other avenues where you might be able to work on technology, but it's not relying on perhaps the architecture itself to deliver the technology.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this fits under technology or biophilic, but, you know, I love a good aquarium. And Melbourne Children's Hospital has a massive aquarium with a shark in the middle of the hospital, and it's kind of like so distracting for children and patients and the staff. Mm. But if you, you know, for practicality reasons, you can't have an aquarium, what's the science behind having those big screens with fish, like the aquarium scene constantly moving, or the fireplace? You know, does that also help well-being?
Definitely. So that's part of that positive distraction, where you'll have something that's constantly moving, so it's constantly catching your eye, and if it's changing as well over time. So obviously the fireplace that's always burning, that's just constantly moving. That's one part of it. But if that were to be different things as well, then because if I'm a patient, I'm in there for a number of months, I'm going to see that fireplace nonstop.
Yeah.
So in case you want the ability, and being digital, it's very easy to do, to be able to swap out your images. So over time, I feel like I'm seeing something new. And definitely a distraction, definitely like art, it's a discussion point, and you can change it over time as well.
Now, this might be an impossible question, but, you know, you're at the cusp of designing new hospitals. What do you think we will see more of in the new hospitals of the future?
I think we are definitely going to be focusing on well-being, as we do now, but I think it's going to be more of a focus, because what we're finding is, perhaps in the past where something was an acute disease, it's now becoming a chronic disease, therefore you're in the hospital a lot longer. And so how do we still with that mindset of saying, how can we help you recover quicker? So we're definitely always going to be focusing on the ability to recover quicker. We're definitely obviously going to probably more technology to be able to help us. Technology might be in the way that perhaps the spaces don't have to be so big or so large. And we will definitely be seeing equipment getting smaller. We'll definitely be seeing the ability for people to be cared for at home.
Mm.
You know, that's the next piece we're starting to see. So you might come in for a particular surgery, but you might find that you're recovering quicker at home. So definitely that piece where we can get you home quicker and you can be checked in from home and not physically come into a hospital. I think we'll see more of that in the future.
Like hospital in the home or, yeah.
Yeah. I was discussed as telehealth, but a lot of that is really...
Well, the virtual hospitals.
Yeah, and I'll say we're on the cusp of it. I mean, there's a lot of conversations about it, and we're seeing a lot of the private providers do it, and it's coming into public as well. But that's the ability to then, with every conversation, it's about how can we get you home quicker.
And this, again, may not be a question for you, but in terms of architecture, like there's a much more family-centered focus care, you know, bearing in mind infection, are you finding that now people want to create a space to keep patients and relatives closer together?
Definitely. And we're definitely seeing that in children's hospitals.
Yeah.
We're seeing the focus not only on the patient but the carer. So what amenity are we providing for the carer? Do they have the ability to sleep? Do they have the ability to perhaps do their day job while their child is in the hospital? So we're seeing more homely things like perhaps a desk. And then the other one is the sibling, because, again, if you've got a number of young kids, you're not going to have a carer or a sitter, so you're going to bring the whole family into the hospital.
Mm.
So it's you know, is there somewhere for the sibling to do some colouring in, or perhaps they could watch TV. So definitely we are thinking about how does the whole family use a room more so than just the patient.
Yeah. And my last inquisitive question for you is, we're seeing more and more with new hospitals the use of hot desks for health professionals, and where health professionals have lost offices, and where a staff of 200 have got a table that fits 8, and that's our only morning, you know, tea area or lunchroom area, which has had profound impact, not just on the well-being and our ability to break out and have spaces, but also our ability for informal education or catch up or talking. Is that something that, I guess, people in your field are aware of, thinking of when you're building things, or is it just we've got a limited space, we focus on the patients first, and then the staff needs kind of get pushed to the end?
We try and balance both. It's really important for us to be able to have a breakout space for the staff, and that could be internal or external. Like all of us, we learn most when we're talking with our work colleagues. And I know in our office, you want to be surrounded by your work colleagues so you can discuss a problem and try and solve something quite quickly. So you do want that ability that they can be co-located together. They can also have a break from each other as well. And they can also then move around the hospital. So definitely it's just as the staff are just as important as the patient. So we try and deliver both.
The tricky thing is, I guess, it's not on the designer in this situation to make those final decisions. And it's that thing of essential versus desirable comes down to the perspective of the purchaser at the end. And I've seen this over time just by sheer competition for space. The essential part is still viewed as the service provision and not recognizing necessarily that the staff are equally an essential part. So that gets put into the desirable and shrinks down in the end product that's sometimes delivered from, I guess, where your designs may start.
Well, we're always given a brief to work to, and that brief will come from the hospital. Yep. So we do try and work through that brief and provide everything that's on it. But yeah, there is definitely a push-pull when it comes to space allocation. And then you have to work with the client on what are the priorities for those spaces.
All right. So that's been really fascinating. And I hope what our listeners have taken away from that is that, you know, have input if you're getting a new build for your hospital or there's a renovation, to have that input and raise these important issues, but even to think about how you can use your existing space. So your number one was the importance of having natural light and views. And this is because it improves mood. It supports the body's natural healing with the circadian rhythms. And also I liked that you said, you know, that having light of like, oh, you know, the big door is a way of orientating patients and their carers around the hospital. So if someone is in an existing space, think about your natural light, think about other patients facing the beds, think about in your own practice when you're taking a break, are you going to an area where you can see natural light? Have you been outside today? All really important for your own well-being. Your number two was comfortable and functional spaces. And you talked about, you know, having ease of movement, noise reduction, quiet zones, thinking about lights, helping patients and staff being orientated to day and to night with regards to that. Your number three was on biophilic design, which I'm going to guess has got something to do with integrating nature or natural things into the overall design. And so you talked about the important, where possible, about having real plants and greenery for quality of air and just the way that it looks and how it makes us all feel when we feel like we're near plants. But if you can't have the real deal, there's some great artificial plants, and even that can help with our moods. The use of natural materials, the way that we use sound and water design. And I guess I was even going to ask you, we've just run a 14-day self-care challenge, and I read science that was saying even listening to bird sound is as good for your brain almost as being outside. So just to even think, if you've got a patient who's been inside for a long time, can you get them outside? And if you can't, how can we put them near a window and play some bird noises as a way of just helping their overall well-being? Your number four was the importance of art and colour and how this affects mood. It can either reduce or escalate anxiety. And this is not just, again, for patients. This is also for visitors and staff. And you talked about that white is for relief, green is for contentment, orange and yellow creates joy. And so how do the colours and what we have integrated around our hospitals, you know, either, you know, escalate or agitate, or whether they're calming? The other thing that you said that I thought was excellent is about using art as a distraction. So if we have a really interesting piece in the bedroom, then, you know, encouraging patients to talk about that with their carers, because some people who are in here for a long time, like people come to visit, what else is there to talk about? So having really interesting, even if it's controversial, you know, pieces of art, I like it, I don't, can be really important just as something to talk about. Number five was technology integration and all the many ways that this can happen. So you've talked about you know, using apps more, and perhaps we're going to see this more and more in the future, to help patients navigate their way around a hospital, to help them be prepared about what to expect, what their visit might entail, using this with children, and really optimizing technology to leverage well-being. So again, if you can't have a beautiful piece of artwork about having a big TV that has an aquarium on there, or, you know, a warm fireplace, etc., it's another positive distraction. But what it needs to entail is something that's got constant movement and change, so it can be a point of conversation, a lovely piece of distraction, and also just lovely and calming within the hospital environment. That has been super fascinating and something that, you know, we never get to talk about as healthcare professionals. So Sandra, thank you so much for coming to join us today on Five Things.
Thanks, Liz and Jesse. I've enjoyed my time.
Thank you.
The Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital Five Things Nursing Podcast acknowledges the Turrbal and Yuggera as the First Nations owners of the lands we now tread. We pay respect to their elders, laws, customs, and creation spirits. We recognise that these lands have always been places of healing, teaching, and learning. We also wish to acknowledge the First Nations people of the lands of our global community and encourage our listeners to seek out, listen, and learn from the knowledge held in your shared space. As well as all major podcast outlets, you can find us at fivethingsnursing.podbean.com. Please also subscribe and give us a rating on your listening platform of choice. This helps others find the podcast. And finally, if you'd like to connect with Liz or myself on Twitter, we can be found at LizCrow2. And for me, it's inject_orange. We would absolutely love to hear your thoughts, ideas, or feedback. Thanks for listening to Five Things,